anything could happen within that cramped space. Or so I wished. Those moments, however brief and rare, made me feel so special. Hannah Baker chose to spend her free moments with me. And because we were at work, no one would think anything of it. No one could read into it. But why? Why, whenever anyone saw us, did I pretend it meant nothing? We were working, that's what I wanted them to believe. Not hanging out. Just working. Why? Because Hannah had a reputation. A reputation that scared me. That truth first came to light a few weeks ago, at a party, with Hannah directly in front of me. An amazing moment when everything seemed to be falling in place. Looking down into her eyes, I couldn't help telling her I was sorry. Sorry for waiting so long to let her know how I felt. For a brief moment, I was able to admit it. To her. To myself. But I could never admit it again. Till now. But now it's too late. And that's why, right at this moment, I feel so much hate toward myself. I deserve to be on this list. Because if I hadn't been so afraid of everyone else, I might have told Hannah that someone cared, and Hannah might still be alive. I pull my gaze back from the neon sign. I press play.
Sometimes I would stop by Monet's for hot chocolate on my way home. I'd start my homework, or sometimes I'd read. But I wasn't writing poetry anymore. I needed a break. For myself.
I slide my hand from under my chin to the back of my neck. The bottom strands of my hair are drenched in sweat.
But I love poetry. I missed it. And one day, after several weeks, I decided to go back to it. I decided to use poetry to make myself happy. Happy poems. Bright and happy, sunshiny poems. Happy, happy, happy. Like the two women pictured on the flyer at Monet's. They taught a free course called Poetry to Love Life. They promised to teach not only how to love poetry, but through poetry, how to better love ourselves. Sign me up. D7 on your map. The community room at the public library.
It's too dark to go there now.
The poetry class began at the same time the last bell rang at school, so I'd race over there to try and make it without being too late. But even when I was late, everyone seemed happy to have me there to provide the feminine teen perspective, they called it.
Looking around, I see that I'm the only one left in Rosie's. They don't close for another 30 minutes. And even though I'm not eating or drinking anymore, the man behind the counter hasn't asked me to leave, so I'll stay.
Imagine 10 or 12 orange chairs arranged in a circle, with the happy women from the flyer sitting at opposite ends. Only problem was, from day one, they weren't happy. Someone, whoever made that flyer, must have digitally turned their frowns upside down. They wrote about death. About the evilness of men. About the destruction of, and I quote, the greenish-bluish orb with wisps of white. Seriously, that's how they described it. They went on to call Earth a knocked-up, gaseous alien needing an abortion.
Another reason I hate poetry. Who says orb instead of ball or sphere?
Expose yourself, they said. Let us see your deepest and your darkest. My deepest and my darkest. What are you, my gynecologist?
Hannah.
So many times I wanted to raise my hand and say, so when do we get to the happy stuff? The stuff about loving life, you know, poetry. To love life, that's what the flyer said. That's why I'm here. In the end, I only made it through 3 of those poetry groups. But something did come of it. Something good?
No.
I wonder. See, someone else was in that group. Another high schooler with a perspective adored by the older poets. Who was it? The editor of our school's very own Lost and Found Gazette.
Ryan Shaver.
You know who I'm talking about, and I'm sure you, Mr. Editor, can't wait for me to say your name out loud. So here you go, Ryan Shaver. The truth shall set you free.
The motto of the Lost and Found.
You've known this for a while, Ryan, I'm sure of it. At the first mention of poetry, you knew this one was about you. You had to. Though I'm sure you must have thought, this can't be why I'm on the tapes. It wasn't a big deal.
The poem from school. God, it was hers.
Remember, this is one tight, well-connected emotional ball I'm constructing here.
I close my eyes tight, covering my eyes with my hand. I crush my teeth together, jaw muscles burning, to keep from screaming or crying. I don't want her to read it. I don't want to hear that poem in her voice.
Would you like to hear the last poem I wrote before quitting poetry? Before quitting poetry for good? No? Fine. But you've already read it. It's very popular at our school.
I allow my eyelids, my jaw, to relax. The poem. We discussed it in English. We read it aloud many times. And Hannah was there for it all.
Some of you may recall it now. Not word for word, but you know what I'm talking about. The Lost and Found Gazette. Ryan's semi-annual collection of items found lying around campus. Like a love letter tossed under a desk, never discovered by its intended love. If Ryan found it, he'd scratch out the giveaway names and scan it for use in an upcoming gazette. Photographs that fell out of binders, he scanned them, too. History notes covered in doodles by an extremely bored student, he scanned them. Some people may wonder how Ryan found so many interesting items to scan. Did he really find them at all? Or did he steal them? I asked him that very question after one of our poetry meetings, and he swore that everything he printed was found purely by chance. Sometimes, he admitted, people did slip items they found into his locker. Those, he said, he couldn't vouch for 100%. That's why he scratched out names and phone numbers. And photographs, as a rule, couldn't be too embarrassing. He'd gather up 5 or 6 pages of good, quirky material and print up 50 copies. Then he'd staple them together and drop them off at random places throughout school. Restrooms, locker rooms, on the track. Never in the same spot, he told me. He thought it was fitting for people to stumble across his magazine of stumbled across items. But guess what? My poem? He stole it.
I pull a napkin out of the holder and wipe the abrasive paper across my eyes.
Each week after our poetry group, Ryan and I would sit on the library steps and talk. That first week, we simply laughed about the poems the other people had written and read. We laughed about how depressing they all were. Wasn't this supposed to make us happy? He asked. Apparently, he signed up for the same reason as me.
I look up. The man behind the counter tugs on the strings of a heavy trash bag. It's closing time. Can I get a glass of water? I ask.
After the second week of class, we sat on those library steps and read some of our own poems to each other. Poems we'd written at different points in our lives.
He looks at my eyes, at the skin rubbed raw by the napkin.
But only happy poems. Poems about loving life. Poems we would never read to that depression-loving group of miserable poets inside. And, as poets never do, we explained ourselves, line for line. The third week, we took the biggest chance of all, and handed each other our entire notebooks of poetry.
He pushes a glass of ice water in front of me. Except for that glass and the napkin dispensers, the entire length of the counter is empty.
Wow. That took a lot of courage. For me, definitely. I'm sure for you too, Ryan. And for the next 2 hours, with the sun going down, we sat on those concrete steps turning pages. His handwriting was horrible, so it took me a bit longer to read through his poems, but they were amazing. Much deeper than any of mine. His stuff sounded like real poetry. Professional poetry. And someday, I'm sure of it, kids will be forced to analyze his poems out of a textbook.
I touch the cold glass, wrapping my fingers around it.
Of course, I had no idea what his poems meant. Not exactly. But I felt the emotions precisely. They were absolutely beautiful. And I felt almost ashamed at what he must have been thinking as he went through my notebook. Because reading through his, I realized how little time I'd spent on mine. I should have taken the time to choose better words, more emotional words. But one of my poems grabbed him, and he wanted to know more about it, like when I wrote it. But I didn't tell him.
I don't drink the water. I watch a single drop slide down the glass and bump against my finger.
I wrote it the same day a group of students got angry that someone had the nerve to ask for help regarding suicide. Remember why they got upset? Because whoever wrote the note didn't sign her name? How insensitive.
It was anonymous, just like the poem that appeared in The Lost and Found.
So Ryan wanted to know why I wrote the poem. With that one, I told him the poem had to speak for itself. But I was interested in knowing what he thought it meant. On the surface, he said, the poem was about acceptance. Acceptance from my mother. But more than that, I wanted her approval, and I wanted certain people, in this case a boy, to stop overlooking me.
A boy? At the base of the glass, the water creates a delicate suction, then lets go. I take a sip and let a small cube of ice slip into my mouth.
I asked if he thought it meant anything deeper.
I hold the ice on my tongue. It's freezing, but I want it to melt there.
Part of me was joking. I thought he'd figured out my poem exactly. But I wanted to know what a teacher assigning the poem might want his or her students to discover, because teachers always overdo it. But you found it, Ryan. You found the hidden meaning. You found what even I couldn't find in my own poem. The poem wasn't about my mom, you said, or a boy. It was about me. I was writing a letter to myself, hidden in a poem. I flinched when you told me that. I got defensive, even angry. But you were right, and I felt scared and sad by my own words. You told me I wrote that poem because I was afraid of dealing with myself, and I used my mom as an excuse, accusing her of not appreciating or accepting me, when I should have been saying those words into a mirror. And the boy? I asked. What does he represent?
It's me. Oh, God. It's me. I know that now. I cover my ears, not to block any outside noise. The diner is almost completely silent. But I want to feel her words, all of them, as they're said.
While I waited for your answer, I searched my backpack for tissue. At any moment, I knew I might cry. You told me that no boy was overlooking me more than I was overlooking myself. At least that's what you thought it meant. And that's why you asked about the poem. You felt it went deeper than even you could figure out. Well, Ryan, you were right. It went much, much deeper than that. And if you knew that, if that's what you thought, then why did you steal my notebook? Why did you print my poem? The poem that you yourself called scary in The Lost and Found. Why did you let other people read it?
And dissect it. And make fun of it.
It was never a lost poem, Ryan. And you never found it. So it did not belong in your collection. But in your collection is exactly where other people found it. That's where teachers stumbled across it right before their lectures on poetry. That's where classrooms full of students cut up my poem searching for its meaning.
In our class, no one got it right. Not even close. But at the time, we all thought we did. Even Mr. Porter.
Do you know what Mr. Porter said before handing out my poem? He said that reading a poem by an unknown member of our school was the same as reading a classic poem by a dead poet. That's right. A dead poet. Because we couldn't ask either one about its true meaning. Then Mr. Porter waited, hoping someone would fess up to writing it. But that, as you know, never happened. So now you know. And for those of you who need a refresher, here it is. Soul Alone by Hannah Baker. I meet your eyes. You don't even see me. You hardly respond when I whisper, hello. Could be my soulmate, two kindred spirits. Maybe we're not. I guess we'll never know. My own mother, you carried me in you. Now you see nothing but what I wear. People ask you how I am doing. You smile and nod. Don't let it end there. Put me underneath God's sky and know me. Don't just see me with your eyes. Take away this mask of flesh and bone and see me for my soul alone. And now you know why. So, did your teachers dissect me properly? Were they right? Did you have any clue at all it was me? Yes, some of you did. Ryan must have told someone, proud that his collection made it into the curriculum. But when people confronted me, I refused to confirm it or deny it, which pissed some of them off. Some even wrote parodies of my poem, reading them to me in hopes of getting under my skin.
I saw that. I watched two girls in Mr. Porter's class recite a version before the bell rang.
It was all so stupid and childish and cruel.
They were relentless, bringing new poems every day for an entire week. Hannah did her best to ignore them, pretending to read while waiting for Mr. Porter to arrive, for the start of class to come to her rescue.
This doesn't seem like a big deal, does it? No, maybe not to you, but school hadn't been a safe haven of mine for a long time. And after your photo escapades, Tyler, my home was no longer secure. Now, suddenly, even my own thoughts were being offered up for ridicule.
Once, in Mr. Porter's class, when those girls were teasing her, Hannah looked up. Her eyes caught mine for just a moment, a flash. But she knew I was watching her. And even though no one else saw it, I turned away. She was on her own.
Very nice, Ryan. Thank you. You're a true poet.
I pressed stop. I pull the headphones out of my ears and hang them around my neck. I don't know what's going on with you, the man says from across the counter. But I'm not taking your money. He blows into a straw and pinches both ends shut. I shake my head and reach back for my wallet. No, I'll pay. He winds the straw tighter and tighter. I'm serious. It was only a milkshake. And like I said, I don't know what's going on. And I don't know how I can help. But something's clearly gone wrong in your life. So I want you to keep your money. His eyes search mine, and I know he means it. I don't know what to say. Even if the words would come, my throat is so tight, it won't let them escape. So I nod, grab my backpack, and change the tape as I head for the door. Cassette 5, Side A. The glass door to Rosie's closes behind me, and I hear three locks immediately slide into place. So now where? Home? Back to Monet's? Or maybe I'll go to the library after all. I can sit outside on the concrete steps, listen to the remainder of the tapes in the dark.
Clay.
It's Tony's voice. Bright headlights flash three times. The driver's side window is down and Tony's outstretched hand waves me over. I tug the zipper on my jacket up and walk over to his window. But I don't lean in. I don't feel like talking, not now. Tony and I have known each other for years, working on projects and joking around after class. And all that time, we've never had a deep conversation. Now, I'm afraid, he wants to have one. He's been sitting here this whole time, just sitting in his car, waiting. What else could be on his mind? He won't look at me. Instead, he reaches out to adjust the side mirror with his thumb. Then he closes his eyes and lets his head fall forward.
Get in, Clay. Is everything all right?
After a short pause, slowly, he nods. I walk around the front of his car, open the passenger door, and sit, keeping one foot out on the blacktop. I place my backpack with Hannah's shoebox inside it on my lap.
Shut the door,
he says. Where are we going?
It's okay, Clay. Just shut the door.
He winds the handle on his door, and his window slides up.
It's cold outside.
His gaze slips from the dashboard to the stereo to his steering wheel, but he won't face me. The moment I pull the door shut, like the trigger on a starting pistol, he begins.
You're the ninth person I've had to follow, Clay.
What? What are you talking about?
The second set of tapes.
He says,
Hannah wasn't bluffing. I've got them.
Oh, God. I cover my face with both hands. Behind my eyebrow, the pounding is back again. With the base of my palm, I press on it, hard.
It's okay, he says.
I can't look at him. What does he know? About me? What has he heard? What's okay?
What were you listening to in there?
What?
Which tape?
I can try and deny it, pretend I have no clue what he's talking about, or I can get out of his car and leave. But either way, he knows.
It's okay, Clay. Honest. Which tape?
With my eyes still shut, I press my knuckles against my forehead. Ryan's, I say, the poem. Then I look at him. He leans his head back, eyes closed.
What? I ask. No answer. Why'd she give them to you? He touches the keychain dangling in the ignition.
Can I drive while you listen to the next tape?
Tell me why she gave them to you.
I'll tell you, he says, if you'll just listen to the next tape right now.
Why?
Clay, I'm not joking. Listen to the tape.
Then answer my question.
Because it's about you, Clay. He lets go of his keys. The next tape is about you.
Nothing. My heart doesn't jump. My eyes don't flinch. I don't breathe. And then, I snap my arm back, my elbow into the seat. Then I smash it into the door and I want to pound my head sideways into the window, but I pound it back against the headrest instead. Tony lays a hand on my shoulder. Listen to it, he says, and don't leave this car. He turns the ignition. With tears falling, I roll my head to face him, but he's staring straight ahead. I open the door of the Walkman and pull out the tape. The fifth tape. A dark blue number 9 in the corner. My tape. I am number 9. I drop the tape back into the Walkman, and holding the player in both hands, close it like a book. Tony puts the car in gear and drives through the empty parking lot, heading for the street. Without looking, I run my thumb across the top of the Walkman, feeling for the button that brings me into the story. I press play.
Romeo, O Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo?
My story. My tape. This is how it begins.
Good question, Juliet. And I wish I knew the answer.
Tony shouts over the engine,
Clay, it's okay.
To be totally honest, there was never a point where I said to myself, Clay Jensen, he's the one.
Just hearing my name, the pain in my head doubles. I feel an agonizing twist in my heart.
I'm not even sure how much of the real Clay Jensen I got to know over the years. Most of what I knew was secondhand information, and that's why I wanted to know him better. Because everything I heard, and I mean everything, was good. It was one of those things where, once I noticed it, I couldn't stop noticing it. Kristen Rennert, for example, she always wears black. Black pants or black shoes, black shirt. If it's a black jacket and that's the only black she's wearing, she won't take it off all day. The next time you see her, you'll notice it. And then you won't be able to stop noticing it. Steve Oliver's the same way. Whenever he raises his hand to say something or ask a question, he always begins with the words, all right. Mr. Oliver?
All right. If Thomas Jefferson was a slave owner...
Mr. Oliver?
All right. I got 76.1225.
Mr. Oliver?
All right. Can I have a hall pass?
Seriously. Every time. And now you'll notice it, too. Every time.
Yes, I've noticed it, Hannah. But let's get on with it, please.
Overhearing gossip about Clay became a similar distraction, and like I said, I didn't know him very well. But my ears perked up whenever I heard his name. I guess I wanted to hear something, anything, juicy. Not because I wanted to spread gossip. I just couldn't believe someone could be that good.
I glance at Tony and roll my eyes, but he's driving, looking straight ahead.
If he actually was that good, wonderful. Great. But it became a personal game of mine. How long could I go on hearing nothing but good things about Clay Jensen? Normally, when a person has a stellar image, another person's waiting in the wings to tear them apart. They're waiting for that one fatal flaw to expose itself. But not with Clay.
Again, I look over at Tony. This time, he's smirking.
I hope this tape doesn't make you run out and dig for that deep, dark, and dirty secret of his, which I'm sure is there. At least one or two of them, right?
I've got a few.
But wait, isn't that what you're doing, Hannah? You're setting him up as Mr. Perfect only to tear him down. You, Hannah Baker, were the one waiting in the wings, waiting for a flaw. And you found it. And now you can't wait to tell everyone what it is and ruin his image. To which I say, no.
My chest relaxes, freeing a breath of air I didn't even know I was holding.
And I hope you're not disappointed. I hope you aren't just listening, salivating for gossip. I hope these tapes mean more to you than that. Clay, honey, your name does not belong on this list.
I lean my head against the window and close my eyes, concentrating on the cold glass. Maybe if I listen to the words but concentrate on the cold, maybe I can hold it together.
You don't belong in the same way as the others. It's like that song, one of these things is not like the others, one of these things just doesn't belong. And that's you, Clay. But you need to be here if I'm going to tell my story. To tell it more completely.
I press pause. Why do I have to hear this? I ask. Why didn't you just skip me if I don't belong? Tony keeps driving. If he looks anywhere other than straight ahead, it's only briefly into the rearview mirror. I would have been happier never hearing this, I say. Tony shakes his head. No, it would drive you crazy not knowing what happened to her. I stare through the windshield at the white lines glowing in the headlights, and I realize he's right. Besides, he says, I think she wanted you to know. Maybe, I think, but why? Where are we going? He doesn't answer. I press play.
Yes, there are some major gaps in my story. Some parts I just couldn't figure out how to tell, or couldn't bring myself to say out loud. Events I haven't come to grips with, that I'll never come to grips with. And if I never have to say them out loud, then I never have to think them all the way through. But does that diminish any of your stories? Are your stories any less meaningful because I'm not telling you everything?
No.
Actually, it magnifies them. You don't know what went on in the rest of my life. At home, even at school. You don't know what goes on in anyone's life but your own. And when you mess with one part of a person's life, you're not messing with just that part. Unfortunately, you can't be that precise and selective. When you mess with one part of a person's life, you're messing with their entire life. Everything affects everything. The next few stories are centered around one night.
The party.
They're centered around our night, Clay. And you know what I mean by our night, because through all the years we've spent going to the same school or working together at the movie theater, there's only one night when we connected. When we really connected. That night drags many of you into the story as well. One of you for the second time. A random night that none of you can take back.
I hated that night. Even before these tapes, I hated it. That night, I ran to tell an old woman that her husband was fine. Everything was going to be fine, but I was lying. Because while I was running to comfort his wife, the other driver was dying. And the old man, by the time he got home to his wife, he knew it.
Hopefully no one will hear these tapes except for those of you on this list, leaving any changes they bring to your lives completely up to you. Of course, if the tapes do get out, you'll have to deal with consequences completely out of your control. So I sincerely hope you're passing them on.
I glance at Tony. Would he really do that? Could he? Would he give the tapes to someone not on the list? Who?
For some of you, those consequences may be minimal. Maybe shame or embarrassment. But for others, it's hard to say. A lost job? Jail time? Let's keep this between us, shall we? So Clay, I wasn't even supposed to be at that party. I was invited, but I wasn't supposed to be there. My grades were slipping pretty fast. My parents asked for progress reports every week from my teachers. And when none of them came back with improvements, I was grounded. For me, grounded meant that I had 1 hour to get home from school. 1 hour being my only free time until I brought those grades up.
We're at a stoplight, and still, Tony keeps his eyes straight ahead. Does he want to avoid seeing me cry? Because he doesn't have to worry. I'm not. Not right now.
During one of my Clay Jensen gossip moments, I found out that you were going to be at the party. What? Clay Jensen at a party? Unheard of.
I study on the weekends, and most of my classes were tested every Monday. It's not my fault.
Not only was that my first thought, that's what the people around me were talking about, too. No one could figure out why they never saw you at parties. Of course, they had all sorts of theories. But guess what? That's right. None of them were bad.
Give me a break.
As you know, since Tyler's not tall enough to peep through a second-story window, sneaking out of my bedroom wasn't hard to do. And that night I just had to do it. But don't jump to conclusions. I've snuck out of my house before that night. Only twice. Okay, three times. Maybe four, tops. For those of you who don't know which party I'm talking about, there's a red star on your map. A big, fat, red star completely filled in. C6, 512 Cottonwood.
Is that where we're going?
Ah, so now you know. Now some of you know exactly where you fit in. But you'll have to wait until your name pops up to hear what I'm going to tell. To hear how much I tell. That night, I decided that walking to the party would be nice, relaxing. We had a lot of rain that week, and I remember the clouds were still hanging low and thick. The air was warm for that time of night, too. My absolute favorite type of weather.
Mine, too.
Pure magic. It's funny. Walking by the houses on my way to the party, it felt like life held so many possibilities. Limitless possibilities. And for the first time in a long time, I felt hope.
So did I. I forced myself out of the house and to that party. I was ready for something new to happen, something exciting.
Hope? Well, I guess I misread things a bit.
And now, knowing what happened between Han and me, would I still have gone, even if nothing changed?
It was simply the calm before the storm.
I would. Yes. Even if the outcome stayed the same.
I wore a black skirt with a matching hooded pullover, and on my way there, I took a 3-block detour to my old house, the one I lived in when we first moved to town. The first red star from the first side of the first tape. The porch light was on, and in the garage, a car's engine was running. But the garage door was shut.
Am I the only one who knows this? Does anyone else know that's where he lived? The man from the accident? The man whose car killed a student from our school?
I stopped walking and, for what seemed like several minutes, just watched from the sidewalk, mesmerized. Another family in my house, I had no idea who they were or what they were like, what their lives were like. The garage door began to lift, and in the glow of the red taillights, the silhouette of a man pushed the heavy door all the way up. He got in the car, backed it down the driveway, and drove off. Why he didn't stop, why he didn't ask why I was standing there, staring at his house, I don't know. Maybe he thought I was waiting for him to back out of the driveway before continuing on my merry way. But whatever the reason, it felt surreal. Two people, me and him. One house. Yet he drove away with no idea of his link to me. The girl on the sidewalk. And for some reason, at that moment, the air felt heavy, filled with loneliness. And that loneliness stayed with me through the rest of the night. Even the best moments of the night were affected by that one incident, by that non-incident in front of my old house. His lack of interest in me was a reminder. Even though I had a history in that house, it didn't matter. You can't go back to how things were, how you thought they were. All you really have is now.
Those of us on the tapes, we can't go back either. We can never not find a package on our doorstep, or in our mailbox. From that moment on, we're different.
Which explains my overreaction, Clay. And that's why you'll get these tapes. To explain. To say I'm sorry.
Does she remember? Does she remember that I apologized to her that night? Is that why she's apologizing to me?
The party was well underway by the time I got there. Most people, unlike me, didn't have to wait for their parents to fall asleep. The usual crowd hung out by the front door of the party, drunk out of their minds, greeting everyone with a raised cup of beer. I would think Hannah would be a hard name to slur, but those guys did it pretty well. Half of them kept repeating my name, trying to get it right, while the other half laughed. But they were harmless. Fun drunks make a nice addition to any party. Not looking to fight, not looking to score, just looking to get drunk and laugh.
I remember those guys, like the mascots of the party.
Clay, what you doing here?
The music was loud and no one was dancing. It could have been any party. Except for one thing. Clay Jensen. I'm sure you heard a lot of sarcastic remarks when you first arrived. But by the time I got there, to everyone else, you were just a part of the party. But unlike everyone else, you were the whole reason I came. With everything going on in my life, going on in my head, I wanted to talk with you. Really talk. Just once. A chance we never seem to get at school or at work. A chance to ask, who are you?
We didn't get that chance because I was afraid. Afraid I had no chance with you. That's what I thought. And I was fine with that. Because what if I got to know you and you turned out to be just like they said? What if you weren't the person I hoped you were? That, more than anything, would have hurt the most.
And as I stood in the kitchen, in line to fill my cup for the first time, you walked up behind me. Hannah Baker, you said. And I turned toward you. Hannah. Hey.
When she first arrived, when she walked through the front door, she caught me off guard. And like a freak, I turned around, ran through the kitchen, and straight out the back. It was too soon, I told myself. I went to the party telling myself that if Hannah Baker showed up, I was going to talk to her. It was time. I didn't care who was there, I was going to keep my eyes focused on her, and we were going to talk. But then she walked in, and I freaked out.
I couldn't believe it. Out of the blue, there you were.
No, not out of the blue. First I paced around the backyard, cursing myself for being such a scared little boy. Then I let myself out through the gate, fully intent on walking home. But on the sidewalk, I beat myself up some more. Then I walked back to the front door, the drunk people greeted me again, and I went straight for you. It was anything but out of the blue.
I don't know why, you said, but I think we need to talk.
It took all the guts in the world to keep that conversation going. Guts and two plastic cups of beer.
And I agreed, with probably the dumbest smile plastered on my face.
No, the most beautiful.
And then I noticed the doorframe behind you leading into the kitchen. It had a bunch of pen and pencil marks scratched on it, keeping track of how fast the children in the house were growing. And I remembered watching my mom erase those marks on our old kitchen door, getting ready to sell the house to move here.
I saw that. I saw something in your eyes when you looked over my shoulder.
Anyway, you looked at my empty cup, poured half of your drink into mine, and asked if now would be a good time to talk. Please don't read into that, people. Yes, it sounds all smooth and get the girl drunk, but it wasn't. It didn't seem that way to me.
It wasn't. No one's going to buy that, but it's true.
Because if that was the case, he would have encouraged me to fill my cup all the way. So we walked into the living room where one side of the couch was occupied.
By Jessica Davis and Justin Foley.
But there was plenty of room on the other end, so we sat down. And what was the first thing we did? We set down our cups and started talking. Just like that.
She had to know it was them. Jessica and Justin. But she didn't say their names. The first boy she kissed, kissing the girl who slapped her at Monet's. It was like she couldn't escape her past.
Everything I could have hoped for was happening. The questions were personal, as if catching up for the time we let pass. Yet the questions never felt intrusive.
Her voice, if physically possible, comes through the headphones feeling warm. I placed cupped hands over my ears to keep her words from escaping.
And they weren't intrusive. Because I wanted you to know me.
It was wonderful. I couldn't believe Hannah and I were finally talking. Really, talking, and I did not want it to stop. I loved talking with you, Hannah.
It seemed like you could know me. Like you could understand anything I told you. And the more we spoke, I knew why. The same things excited us. The same things concerned us.
You could have told me anything, Hannah. That night, nothing was off limits. I would have stayed till you opened up and let everything out. But you didn't.
I wanted to tell you everything. And that hurt because some things were too scary. Some things even I didn't understand. How could I tell someone? Someone I was really talking to for the first time, everything I was thinking. I couldn't. It was too soon.
But it wasn't.
Or maybe it was too late.
But you're telling me now. Why did you wait till now? Her words, they're not warm anymore. She might want me to hear them that way, but they're burning me up instead. In my mind. In my heart.
Clay, you kept saying that you knew things would flow easily between us. You felt that way for a long time, you said. You knew we'd get along, that we would connect. But how? You never explained that. How could you know? Because I knew what people said about me. I heard all the rumors and lies, and that will always be a part of me.
I knew they weren't true, Hannah. I mean, I hoped they weren't true. But I was too afraid to find out.
I was breaking. If only I'd talked to you sooner. I don't know. But things had gone too far by then. My mind was set. Not on ending my life, not yet. It was set on floating through school. On never being close to anyone. That was my plan. I'd graduate. Then I'd leave. But then I went to a party. I went to a party to meet you. Why did I do that? To make myself suffer? Because that's what I was doing. Hating myself for waiting so long. Hating myself because it wasn't fair to you.
The only thing that's not fair are these tapes, Hannah. Because I was there for you. We were talking. You could have said anything. I would have listened to absolutely anything.
The couple sitting beside us on the couch. The girl was drunk and laughing and bumping into me every so often. Which was funny at first, but it got old real fast.
Why isn't Hannah saying her name?
I started to think maybe she wasn't so drunk after all. Maybe it was all a show for the guy she was talking with. When they were actually talking. Maybe she wanted the couch all to herself and her guy. So Clay and I left. We walked around the party shouting over the music wherever we went. Eventually, successfully, I spun the conversation around. No more big and heavy topics. We needed to laugh. But everywhere we went, it was too noisy to hear each other. So we wound up in the doorway to an empty room.
I remember everything that happened next. I remember it perfectly. But how does she remember it?
While we were standing there, our backs against the doorframe, drinks in hand, we couldn't stop laughing. And yet the loneliness I entered the party with came rushing back. But I wasn't alone. I knew that. For the first time in a long time, I was connecting. Connected with another person from school. How in the world was I alone?
You weren't, Hannah. I was there.
Because I wanted to be. That's all I can say. It's all that makes sense to me. How many times had I let myself connect with someone only to have it thrown back in my face? Everything seemed good, but I knew it had the potential to be awful. Much, much more painful than the others.
There was no way that was going to happen.
So there you were, letting me connect with you. And when I couldn't do that anymore, when I pulled the conversation to lighter topics, you made me laugh. And you were hilarious, Clay. You were exactly what I needed. So I kissed you.
No, I kissed you, Hannah.
A long and beautiful kiss. And what did you say when we came up for air? With the cutest, littlest, boyish smirk, you asked, "What was that for?"
Right. You kissed me.
To which I said, "You're such an idiot." And we kissed some more.
An idiot. Yes, I remember that, too.
Eventually, we shut the door and moved deeper into the room. We were on one side of the door, and the rest of the party, with its loud but muffled music, was on the other.
Amazing. We were together. That's what I kept thinking the whole time. Amazing. I had to concentrate so hard to keep that word from spilling out of my mouth.
Some of you may be wondering, how come we never heard about this? We always find out who Hannah made out with.
Because I never told.
Wrong. You only thought you found out. Haven't you been listening? Or did you only pay attention to the tape with your name on it? Because I can count on one hand. Yes, one hand, how many people I've made out with. But you probably thought I'd need both hands and both feet just to get started, right? What's that? You don't believe me? You're shocked? Guess what? I don't care. The last time I cared what anyone thought about me was that night. And that was the last night.
I unbuckle my seatbelt and lean forward. I clasp my hand over my mouth and squeeze to keep from screaming. But I do scream. The sound dampened in the palm of my hand. And Tony keeps driving.
Now, get comfortable because I'm going to tell you what happened in the room between Clay and me. Are you ready? We kissed. That's it. We kissed.
I look down at my lap, at the Walkman. It's too dark to see the spindles behind the plastic window, pulling the tape from one side to the other. But I need to focus on something, so I try. And concentrating on the spot where two spindles should be is the closest I get to looking into Hannah's eyes as she tells my story.
It was wonderful. Both of us lying on the bed, one of his hands resting on my hip, his other arm cradling my head like a pillow, both of my arms hugging him, trying to pull him closer. And speaking for myself, I wanted more.
That's when I said it. That's when I whispered to her, "I'm so sorry." Because inside I felt so happy and sad at the same time. Sad that it took me so long to get there, but happy that we got there together.
The kisses felt like first kisses. Kisses that said I could start over if I wanted to. With him. But start over from what? And that's when I thought of you, Justin. For the first time in a long time, I thought of our first kiss. My real first kiss. I remembered the anticipation leading up to it. I remembered your lips pressed against mine. And then I remembered how you ruined it. Stop, I told Clay, and my hand stopped pulling him in.
You pushed your hands against my chest.
Could you feel what I was going through, Clay? Did you sense it? You must have.
No, you hid it. You never told me what it was, Hannah.
I shut my eyes so tight it was painful, trying to push away all that I was seeing in my head. And what I saw was everyone on this list, and more. Everyone up to that night. Everyone who caused me to be so intrigued by Clay's reputation. How his reputation was so different from mine.
No, we were the same.
And I couldn't help that. What everyone thought of me was out of my control. Clay, your reputation was deserved. But mine? Mine was not. And there I was with you, adding to my reputation.
But it wasn't like that. Who was I going to tell, Hannah?
Stop, I repeated. This time I moved my hands under your chest and pushed you away. I turned to the side, burying my face in the pillow. You started to talk, but I made you stop. I asked you to leave. You started to talk again, and I screamed. I screamed into the pillow. And then you stopped talking. You heard me. The bed lifted on your side as you got up to leave the room, but it took you forever to leave, to realize that I was serious.
I was hoping you'd tell me to stop again, to stop leaving.
Even though my eyes remained shut, buried in the pillow, the light changed when you finally opened the door. It grew brighter, then it faded again, and you were gone.
Why did I listen? Why did I leave her there? She needed me, and I knew that. But I was scared. Once again, I let myself get scared.
And then I slid off the bed and down to the floor. I just sat there beside the bed, hugging my knees and crying. That, Clay, is where your story ends.
But it shouldn't have. I was there for you, Hannah. You could have reached out, but you didn't. You chose this. You had a choice, and you pushed me away. I would have helped you. I wanted to help you.
You left the room, and we never spoke again.
Your mind was set. No matter what you say, it was set.
In the hallways at school, you tried catching my eye, but I always looked away. Because that night, when I got home, I tore a page from my notebook and wrote down one name after another. The names in my head when I stopped kissing you. There were so many names, Clay. 36 at least. And then, I made the connections. I circled your name first, Justin. And I drew a line from you to Alex. I circled Alex and drew a line to Jessica, bypassing names that didn't connect that just floated there, incidents, all by themselves. My anger and frustration with all of you turned to tears, and then back to anger and hate every time I found a new connection. And then I reached Clay. The reason I went to the party. I circled his name and drew a line back. Back to a previous name.
It was Justin.
In fact, Clay, soon after you left and shut the door, that person reopened it.
On Justin's tape, the first tape, she said his name would reappear. And he was at that party, on the couch with Jessica.
But that person's already received the tapes. So, Clay, just skip him when you pass them on. In a roundabout way, he caused a new name to be added to this list. And that's who should receive the tapes from you. And yes, Clay, I'm sorry, too.
I press stop. My eyes sting, not from the salt in my tears, but because I haven't closed them since learning Hannah cried when I left the room. Every muscle in my neck burns to turn away, to look out the window away from the Walkman and let my eyes stare into nothing. But I can't bring myself to move, to break the effect of her words. Tony slows the car and pulls over to a curb. You okay? It's a residential street, but it's not the street of the party. I shake my head no. Are you going to be okay? He asks. I lean back, resting my head against the seat, and close my eyes. I miss her. I miss her too, he says. And when I open my eyes, his head is down. Is he crying? Or maybe trying not to cry? The thing is, I say, I never really missed her till now. He sits back in his seat and looks over at me. I didn't know what to make of that night. Everything that happened, I'd liked her for so long from far away, but I never had a chance to tell her. I looked down at the Walkman. We only had one night, and by the end of that night it seemed like I knew her even less than before. But now I know. I know where her mind was that night. Now I know what she was going through. My voice breaks, and in that break comes a flood of tears. Tony doesn't respond. He looks out into the empty street, allowing me to sit in his car and just miss her. To miss her each time I pull in a breath of air. To miss her with a heart that feels so cold by itself, but warm when thoughts of her flow through me. I wipe the cuff of my jacket under my eyes. Then I choke back my tears and laugh. Thanks for listening to all that, I say. Next time, it's okay to stop me. Tony turns on the blinker, looks over his shoulder, and pulls us back into the street. But he doesn't look at me. You're welcome. Cassette 5, Side B. It feels like we've driven this same road multiple times since leaving Rosie's. Like he's stalling for time. Were you at the party? I ask. Tony looks outside his window and changes lanes. No. Clay, I need to know that you're going to be all right. Impossible to answer. Because no, I didn't push her away. I didn't add to her pain or do anything to hurt her. Instead, I left her alone in that room. The only person who might have been able to reach out and save her from herself. To pull her back from wherever she was heading. I did what she asked, and I left. When I should have stayed. No one blames me, I whisper. I need to hear it said aloud. I need to hear the words in my ears and not just in my head. No one blames me. No one, Tony says, his eyes still on the road. What about you? I ask. We approach a four-way stop and slow down. For a moment, from the corner of his eye, he looks at me. Then he returns his gaze to the road. No, I don't blame you. But why you? I ask. Why did she give you the other set of tapes? Let me drive you to the party house, he says. I'll tell you there. You can't tell me now? His smile is weak. I'm trying to keep us on the road. I press play.
Soon after Clay left, the couple from the couch walked into the bedroom. Actually, stumbled into the bedroom is more accurate. Remember them? I thought she was acting drunk, bumping into me so we'd get up and leave. Unfortunately, it wasn't an act. She was smashed.
I passed them in the hall. One of Jessica's arms lay flopped over Justin's shoulders. The other one groped for the wall to steady herself.
Of course, I didn't actually see them come in. I was still on the floor, my back against the far side of the bed, and it was dark.
When I walked out of the room, I felt so frustrated, so confused. I leaned against the piano in the living room, almost needing to hold myself up. What should I do? Stay? Leave? But where would I go?
Her sofa buddy kept her from stumbling too hard into the nightstand. And when she rolled off the bed, twice, he lifted her back on. Nice guy that he was, he kept the laughter to a minimum. I thought he would tuck her in and shut the door behind him as he left, and that would be the perfect time for my getaway. End of story.
Hannah wasn't my first kiss, but the first kiss that mattered. The first kiss with someone who mattered. And after talking with her for so long that night, I assumed it was just the beginning. Something was happening between us, something right. I felt it.
But that's not the end of the story, because that wouldn't make for a very interesting tape now, would it? And by now, I'm sure you knew it wasn't the end.
Still, with no destination in mind, I left the party.
Instead of leaving, he started kissing her. I know some of you would have easily stayed for such an amazing voyeuristic opportunity, a close encounter of the sexual kind, even if you never saw it, at least you'd hear it. But two things kept me down on that floor. With my forehead pressed against my knees, I realized how much I must have drank that night. And with my balance not what it should have been, to run across the floor felt a little hazardous. So that's one excuse. Excuse number two is that things seemed to be winding down up there. Not only was she drunk and clumsy, she seemed to be completely unresponsive. From what I could tell, it didn't go much beyond kissing, and it seemed to be one-sided kissing at that. Again, nice guy that he was, he didn't take advantage of the situation. He wanted to. He tried for the longest time to get a reaction out of her. Are you still awake? Do you want me to take you to the bathroom? Are you gonna puke? This girl wasn't totally passed out. She grunted and groaned a bit. It dawned on him, finally, that she wasn't in a romantic mood and probably wouldn't be for a while. So he tucked her in and said he'd check on her in a bit. Then he left. At this point, you might be wondering, who are these people? Hannah, you forgot to tell us their names. But I didn't forget. If there's one thing I've still got, it's my memory. Which is too bad. Maybe if I forgot things once in a while, we'd all be a little bit happier.
The mist was heavy when I left the party, and as I walked through the neighborhood, it started to drizzle, then rain. But when I first started walking, it was just a thick mist that left everything sort of hazy.
No, you'll have to wait for a name on this one. Though if you've been paying close attention, I gave you the answer a long time ago. Before I say his name out loud, this guy needs to stew a bit, to remember everything that happened in that room. And he remembers. I know he does. I would love to see his face right now. His eyes shut tight, jaw clenched, fists pulling out his hair. And to him I say, deny it. Go on, deny that I was ever in that room. Deny that I know what you did, or not what you did, but what you didn't do. What you allowed to happen. Rationalize why this isn't the tape you're making a return appearance on. It must be a later tape. It has to be a later tape. Oh, really? And you'd like that? A later tape would make things better? Don't bet on it.
God, what else could have gone wrong that night?
I know she wasn't your girlfriend, that you hardly ever talked to her and barely even knew her. But is that your best excuse for what happened next? Or is that your only excuse? Either way, there is no excuse. I stood up, stabilizing myself with one hand on the bed. Your shoes? The shadow of your shoes were still visible in the light coming out of the door. Because when you left that room, you took up post right outside. And I let go of the bed and started walking toward that sliver of light, not sure what I'd say to you when I opened the door. But halfway there, two more shoes came into view and I stopped.
When I left the party, I just walked. Several blocks, not wanting to go home, not wanting to go back.
The door opened, but you pulled it back and said, No, let her rest. In that tiny burst of light, I saw a closet, its accordion doors halfway open. Meanwhile, your friend was convincing you to let him in that room. I waited, heart pounding, trapped in the middle of the floor.